worldwide. Every weight class. It's Lewis Heaton. Whiskey Bynum. It's the Boxing Rush Hour Show, hosted by Abraham Gonzalez. You know what you came for? Yes, indeed. This where you come to get your info. Listen up. Other shows throwing the towel.
It's the Boxing Rush Hour Show. Let's go. In the ring, we throw hands, octagon elbows. Analytical, critical commentary is necessary. A bevy of opinions, we heavy on the winning. This podcast is to break down the pay-per-view. For boxing purists, yo, let this man through. We rise right, surprise sight at the prize fight. Hands taped up and gloves tied tight. Ring the bell, want some, get some. Let the chick fall where they may work the George Crumb.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to the Boxing Rush Hour Show. I am your host, Abraham Gonzalez. As always, intro music by Lewis Heaton, and this podcast is powered by NYFights.com. NYFights.com brings you boxing coverage from around the world with an NYC edge. Visit NYFights.com for details. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's been a while. We've kind of been... here, there, everywhere, a little busy, got some stuff going on, been busy on the editing side, not so much boxing going on, so took a little bit of time off, went a little bit of vacation, spent some time with the fam, but it looks like we're getting back into the swing of things with boxing news, fight announcements, and those things like that. So before we get into our guest, I just want to make note that this week is Marine Corps Boxing Hall of Fame week. So my guest, this week will be Jose Quesada, who's going to be inducted here in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, to the Marine Corps Boxing Hall of Fame. So more on that here in a little bit. Now, first, let's recap Showtime's card on Saturday night. Danny Garcia, he was the main event, and he fought Jose Benavidez Jr., which wasn't this fantastic fight. It was a lot better than what we saw against Errol Spence Jr. 19 months before that. It was a Danny Garcia fight. What was it? Was it something that made me clamor for some more? Not really. But, he got a win. He looked decent. And, at the end of the fight, he called out Keith Thurman for, to fight at 154. No, thank you. And he also called out Israelanda Lara. Who's the middleweight champ to come down on 155 to a catchweight? I don't know. Both of those fights I'm not interested in. But okay, Danny, we'll see what happens next. All right. But Danny Garcia won. Gary Antoine Russell won in a very confusing stoppage that the referee, I don't know, he just Bartholomew, he looked like he had all his senses together. Ref stopped it, really prematurely. Adam Kovnatsky lost by unanimous decision. And I guess he has to start thinking about what he wants to do in the future. So it was a decent card. A lot of talk about Danny Garcia and whether or not he's done enough to go to the Hall of Fame. Lucas Cattell. Big Dog Lukey, he wrote a column for nyfights.com asking the question, is Danny Garcia a Hall of Famer? A lot of this stemmed from Kate Abdul's interview with Danny that she posted on social media, where that same question was asked, and he said, yeah, he feels like he's done enough. Lukey does a deep dive, and then just recently, Woods just posted a column from the captain, David Phillips, where he goes a little bit into it, but he also says, hey, if Arturo Gatti is in, then should we include Danny Garcia? But more importantly, why isn't Vinny Pazienza in there? That is the real question. Vinny Paz is probably has one of the greatest comebacks of all of sports, right? And they made a movie out of him, well documented. They told that guy he wasn't even going to potentially not even walk ever again, let alone put on the gloves and fight another few years after that. So there's some questions, but excellent work by Big Dog Lukey and the captain, David Phillips. If you missed it, nyfights.com has those articles. All right. Moving on to Spence Crawford, still nothing. The chatter is Vegas in November. Both guys are saying yes, that they wanting to fight. Steven Espinosa saying, you know, that they don't foresee any roadblocks. It's still a little bit early. If they're trying for November, probably need like a 10-week camp. So that puts you at September. So if anything, the fight's going to get done from November. They've got about maybe till the beginning of September to figure it out. After the beginning of September, they're cutting it really close. So something definitely to look towards. All right. So Saturday, while the Showtime telecast was going on, they announced that Jake Paul and Haseem Rahman Jr. fight was called off. There's a whole bunch of, it's the weight. Rahman Jr. couldn't come down, all this and all that. At the end of the day, I don't care what the reason is. The fight is not happening. Let's keep it moving. Who Jake Paul fights next? You know, we'll find out, I'm sure, shortly. It's not going to be Rahman Jr. Rahman Jr.'s, you know, been on social media last few days, just kind of going crazy. Give it up, dude. Like, it's not happening. Figure out what you're going to do with your career next, because the Jake Paul's fight is not going to happen. In other news, Joshua Franco and Golden Boy Promotions are no longer together. Joshua Franco is the brother of Jesse Bam Rodriguez, WBC's super flyweight champion. His brother Joshua, the professor, Franco, he's the WBA regular super fly champ. I don't know exactly what the reasons are, but he's a free man. So be interesting to see where he goes. One has to assume it'll be Top Rank. They have a couple of 115 pounders under their stable there. So be on the lookout for that. All right. The Canelo Triple G card was announced. The full card. First is going to be on pay-per-view, for those that did not know that. So here's the rundown. On pay-per-view in the U.S., $64.99 for current subscribers. $84.99 for new subscribers, which includes 1 month subscription. Canada, $64.99 for current. $89.98 for new subscribers. UK and Ireland is looks like $9.99 for current and $17.98 for new subscribers. Australia is going to be $44.99 for current, $58.98 for new. New Zealand is $24.99 for current and $39.98 for new subscribers. Excluded territories include Mexico, Latin America, and Kazakhstan. All right, so there's that. Canelo Triple G 3, September 17th, is on pay-per-view. So you're either going to flip a $64.99 pay-per-view price tag and pay that, or you're going to pay $84.99 if you're a new subscriber. I'm sure that pay-per-view.com will be offering something as well. They are a legitimate streaming platform for pay-per-view events, especially the bigger ones. So, you know, maybe look out for that, see if there's a deal involved in that. All right, full card. Co-main event, Jesse Bam Rodriguez. We just spoke about him. He's defending his WBC super flyweight title against Israel Gonzalez, Ali Akhmedov, and Gabe Rosado will be fighting for the IBF North American super middleweight title. Austin Amel Williams takes on Kieron Conway for the WBA International Middleweight title. Diego Pacheco is fighting Enrique Collazo, who's the 2012 Olympian, six-time Puerto Rican national champion. Mark Castro, he's fighting against Kevin Montiel Mendoza on an A-round fight. Aaron the Alien King Aponte, he's fighting Fernando Molina. And Anthony Herrera is taking on Delvin McKinley. So that is your Canelo Triple G 3 card that was announced. Now, for fights that are coming up this weekend, we have the young Irish prospect Callum Walsh, who is signed on Tom Loeffler's 360 Promotions. He's headlining a card on UFC Fight Pass on Thursday night against Benjamin Whitaker, who's 15-8 from San Antonio. I did an article on him for nyfights.com, so you could check it out, see who he is, and get familiar with him before the fight on Thursday. All right, moving on to Saturday. Saturday on ESPN Plus, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. Michael McCollin, 16-1. He's back. He's fighting a 10-round fight against Miguel Mariaga, who's 30-5. And then looks like Paddy Donovan, Kurt Walker, and Kieran Molly will be in separate action. Tyrone McKenna is fighting Chris Jenkins. Let's see, Kurt Walker against Marcos Martinez, Paddy Donovan versus Tom Hill. So all that action begins on Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. The UK and Irish fans can catch that card on Fight TV. Now, to the meat and the potatoes, as they say, we have a DAZN, Golden Boy DAZN card that's headlined by Virgil Ortiz Jr. He's going up against McKinson, who he was supposed to fight originally back in March, but now they're going to finally get on it. Mike McKinson. That's going to be a really good fight. Should see Virgil Ortiz Jr., you know, get that buzz back. Doesn't seem like there hasn't been too much buzz for the fight week, probably because his last fight, you know, he had to pull out because he had an illness. But you know, it'll be interesting to see him back in the ring and excite folks. Only thing is that, you know, how's he gonna fight for a championship if Spencer Crawford get at it and later this year? He'd have to wait for that. So or move up. But even moving up, the PBC has all the junior middleweight titles. I don't know. He's in a weird position. But the only thing he can control is the victories that he can rack up. So he needs to keep winning, keep doing his thing, and then see what happens. So on this card, we have Marlon Esparza, who's a unified and Ring Magazine flyweight champion. She's going up against Eva Guzman. Let's see who else. Maurice Hooker, he's fighting Blair Cobbs, but that's going to be a firefight while it lasts. It's going to be a good fight. And then to open the DAZN stream is going to be Bektimir Melikuziev. So Bek the Bully, 9-1. He's going up against Slayton Janinen of Boston. So that is going to be the Saturday card. Now, Golden Boy normally does a fight night type of card prior to the DAZN telecast, which you can find on their YouTube page and on Facebook. Normally, it's just the YouTube page. Okay, yeah. DAZN and Golden Boy YouTube page. Alex Martin, he's fighting Henry Lundy. And it looks like Alex Rincon is back in action. So those are usually good fights, so you don't want to miss those either. And that's Saturday's card from Fort Worth, Texas. So it's DAZN and Virgil Ortiz Jr. versus Mike McKinson headlining. So it should be good. All right. So we're going to go into my guest. This weekend is the Marine Corps Boxing Hall of Fame ceremony, which goes on Saturday here in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. And I'm going to have a couple guests on the podcast this week that are getting inducted. So the first one up is a good friend of mine, longtime friend of mine, Jose Quesada, who is being inducted. He's from New York. He's a South Bronx guy. Very exciting personality, fun, and he's just full of life. So I hope you guys enjoy this interview with me and Jose Quesada. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning into the Boxing Rush Hour show. My next guest is a good friend of mine. He is about to be inducted into the Marine Corps Boxing Hall of Fame. And he has quite the story, I'm sure. but his name is Jose Quesada. What's going on, Jose?
What's going on? Hey, man, good to hear from you.
Yeah, man. Likewise, man. So I'm marking this Boxing Hall of Fame week. So I'm going to have you and I'm going to have a couple other guests just to kind of in support of that. But you're the first one up. And I want people to get a good understanding of those that are going to be inducted, and you know, and how they got to that spot. So before we get into any of the boxing stuff, I want to just get a little bit of a bio blast out there. You know, who you are, where you're from, and growing up. You know, wherever it is that you grew up.
All right. Well, you know. Originally, I'm from Ponce, Puerto Rico, and I grew up in the South Bronx, in the Boogie Down, just down from Yankee Stadium, 175th and Grand Concourse. And then I was, you know, over there, you know, around St. Mary's Park. But, man, I've been in the, I guess, in the combat game since I was seven, you know, so for about 55 years, man, I've been either doing boxing, wrestling, you know, kickboxing, taekwondo, Okinawa Kenpo. I mean, if it had to do with hands and feet, I was in it.
but more or less, I want to know, like, you growing up in the South Bronx, what was it like? And talk about, like, the year that you grew up in and how New York City was during those times.
Oh, man. You know, so you're talking about in the 60s where... 60s and 70s. I can remember back in the 60s, you know, the changes in the South Bronx, the struggles that my mom had. You know, she came to Puerto Rico, not, you know, just me and her, or from Puerto Rico into the Bronx. And just imagine, you know, going into a place that, you know, there was still a lot of turmoil with, you know, the color of our skin, and we're going into South Bronx and, you know, getting work, my mother working at a factory. And I remember as a kid, you know, growing up and sitting right beside her putting radio parts together as she also sent herself through a nursing school, you know, so there was a lot of, you know, education there because I'd never in my life had a babysitter. And, you know, these days you can't leave your kid, your 5, 6, 7 year old by themselves without going to jail, you know? So growing up in the South Bronx, you know, it was tough because I was always a skinny kid, Catholic school. So you know how that went. them nuns, you had to know how to, you know, slip and move if you want to get hit. But, you know, Immaculate Conception, that's where I went to, you know, that was my Catholic school days. And, you know, we weren't privy to have cars and stuff. So either I walked home to Jackson Avenue or, you know, if we had some money scraped together, you know, we took the bus. And, in those neighborhoods, a lot of the street gangs. And if you didn't know how to fight, you were either going to give up your lunch money and take a whooping every day, or you were going to be, left alone. And I chose to be one of those guys that was going to be alone.
Oh, shit. Now, at what point did you decide to take the leap of faith and go into the Marine Corps? Was it immediately after high school? Was there a certain point where, you know, you kind of experienced some things and then it wasn't working out and then you joined, or you joined right after?
Oh, no, I was destined to go into the military. My uncles were in the military. And when I went to Aviation High School in Long Island City, Queens. So, you know, the deal was my mom wanted me to go to a Catholic school. And I said, there's no way. I had enough of the uniform. And she said, I'll make, you know, the deal was if I got into one of the specialized schools in New York City, and, you know, they have a few. They have, you know, Alfred E. Smith, which specializes in automotive, Aviation High School, of course, and aircrafts, the School of Art and Design, you know, Brooklyn Tech, mathematics, you know. So I took all those, and the one that, I mean, blew my mind was Aviation High School, and I really enjoyed it. And I was like, you know, I was destined to go into the military, wanted to go into the Air Force. And in my junior year, I said, you know what, I'm going to sign up and I'm going in the military. And every time I went to the Air Force recruiter, he was never there. And I kept going. And I would see him out in town. I'll say, hey, man, I'm going by your office. And I go up there to the recruiting office, wasn't there. And there was a Marine Corps recruiter. And what got me was him dressed blues. I mean, he was looking sharp. And he said, man, why are you always, I always see you here, you know, about 4 or 5 o'clock. I said, yeah, I'm waiting for the Air Force guy, you know. I want to join the Air Force. And, he said, well, you can wait in my office. After, you know, time and time again, he said, well, what are you looking for? I said, man, you got aviation, you got airplanes in the Marine Corps. He said, yeah. He showed me that. And that was it. I was hooked. I wanted to wear that uniform, you know, the hide collar, you know, all the, you know, the oorah and all that stuff. So I joined the Marine Corps, and I kind of tricked my mom because I told her that I was, when I graduated high school, I told her I was going that September. But what I did, because I was so young when I signed up, I was 16 years old.
Oh.
And so I had to wait till I was 17. So I could have graduated early. So I just, you know, I just stayed in school and just, you know, took some, I don't know, PE classes or something like that. And, when I graduated on that Friday, I didn't tell my mom that I was going to be on the Yellow Footprints till that Friday, and I was leaving Monday. So I had Saturday to see my friends, and Sunday I told my mom, I said, oh, by the way, I'm leaving tomorrow. And she cried and cried and cried, man. And then my recruiter came pick me up Monday morning, and I was gone.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't go to Parris Island. I was supposed to go to Parris Island. If I would have waited till the fall, I would have went to Parris Island. He said, well, I got one slot, but you're going to have to go to California. So I said, what's the difference? He said, there's not much difference. You may get some sunglasses and some suntan. Which, yeah, that was a lie.
Oh, man. And so how long did you, what did you end up doing in the Marine Corps, and how long did you end up spending, how many years did you end up spending in the service?
So I joined the Marine Corps in 78, got out in 83. I spent 5 years. I extended a year. And I was in, I went to the aviation side. I went to aviation operations, and I did it. I got tired of building aircrafts and taking them apart, putting them back together. So I really wanted to see the administrative side of aviation. And so I went into aviation ops, ended up enjoying it, took care of the pilots and stuff. But I had an opportunity because I was a wrestler when I was in high school. And I have won several championships at that point. And I asked if I can try out for the Marine Corps wrestling team. And of course, everybody said no. And I had a CO that was a wrestler himself. And he said, you know, I'm going to give you the opportunity to go try out for the team. If you don't make the team, you're going to come back and play Marine Corps. If you make the team, then I'm going to cheer for you and I'm going to support you. Well, I went out there. There were 22 positions available on the Marine Corps wrestling team. There was 200 wrestlers that showed up.
Wow.
Yeah. So I had to get my Ric Flair on. And, you know, I was 115 pounds, 114 and a half to be exact. And, you know, I made the team as an alternate. And they said, well, we're going to keep you. And the reason I made the team as an alternate, the guys that were in my weight class, you know, they were national, world and world champions and everything else. So these guys had a huge resume. So they said, but, you know, you hung it in there pretty good. And within that year, I actually made the U.S. team on the Sambo team and got to the Olympic Training Center. That was a huge experience, you know, back and forth for about 3 years. And you know, the only reason I got out of the Marine Corps was because I wanted to go to college and I was traveling all the time, you know, hour and a half to go to college, and we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have all this fancy stuff. And how the boxing came into play was, in order for me to go to these wrestling tournaments that I wanted to go to, I would do the Marine Corps, these little Marine Corps smokers, and I would win the 96 so I can go wrestle.
Wow, that is something else.
Yeah, you know.
And during that time, I wonder who was on the Marine Corps boxing team at that time when you were around there?
Oh, man. I want to say Coach Sanders was still around there. J.C. Davis, who's one of the coaches. Leon Spinks was there when I was on the wrestling team. Yeah. A lot of big names that went in there, and I used to go in there, just watch them train and everything else. But you know, I spent most of my time in Quantico, so it was kind of tough. But when I came back, and actually after I got out of the Marine Corps is when I really started getting involved in the boxing and the more the contact sport, because it was it just made more sense at the time, because I crossed over into the martial art world. So it made more sense. And, you know, J.C. Davis, he's one of the guys that, you know, helped with Mike Tyson's back in the day. Some of the names escape me, but, you know, Coach Sanders, Coach Michaels. So all these guys that are there, there's were a big influence on me to really hone in on the boxing side.
Okay. All right. And then, so you after you got out, and you went into, you got into more of the combat sports. What did you specifically get into? I know, you had some like kickboxing stuff and some martial arts and all that. Like, did you go like real deep into it?
Oh yeah. You know, went into, you know, the Kenpo and the Taekwondo to the point where I've reached black belt in both. Started doing the Muay Thai, then I started competing. That was, you know, kind of appealing to me. With I kind of transitioned out of the karate side, and the reason for that, because I was doing a lot of point fighting, and I wanted the more contact. I wanted to be able to, you know, be able to knock somebody out and, you know, or not get worn for being a little too physical. So I started doing the contact sport. Dennis Lane, who's one of the Marine Corps Hall of Famer and seven-time, you know, world champion kickboxer, really got me involved. And we shared coaches, you know. And, man, I just started showing up at different tournaments. And I was, you know, extremely successful in the martial art world. And I actually just really dominated in my weight class when it came to, you know, the Taekwondo and the karate side of things. So it just kept adding more weapons to the arsenal, you know?
There was a point in your life where, you know, that was fun for a while. And then, it seemed like you might have pulled back a little bit, and there was that gap between you doing that, pulling back, and then you starting up again. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So after several years, I wasn't being challenged, and I needed to find a different challenge. So I started coaching. And I really enjoyed the coaching. I enjoyed taking somebody with two left feet and two right hands. They don't know whether they're coming or going. And watching them develop, and I was watching myself in them. And it was really gratifying to watch these women, children, you know, young adults, and they're going in there. And 3, 6 months, a year ago, they didn't know, you know, a shuffle step or left hook or jab. They didn't know any of it. And by doing that, it sharpened my skills. So I kept, you know, always in the back burner. Man, I could probably, you know, do one more. And now I'm getting older. So it was, I never felt my age. And once again, I went and got a license from the North Carolina Commission. And one day I was training at the gym, and a gentleman by the name of Don out of Canada walked in the gym. Me and Tommy Mossman, one of the great trainers out here in this town. Doors opened up, and the guy said, what do you guys do here? Said, hey, we do a little bit of everything, contact sport. He said, well, I'm actually a promoter, and I'm promoting this fight promotion called USA versus the World. And what it was is, you had to be military, active duty, or prior. You had to be a champion at some level. And they were forming a team. And when they formed this team, they went around the United States. And I said, well, who would I be fighting? They said, you're going to be fighting somebody from other than the United States. So there was Russians. There were guys from Japan. We had guys from Finland. We had guys from Spain, Cuba. And I'm going, wow, this is huge. And they offered me a bunch of money to fight the world champion from Spain for 3 rounds and only a minute and a half. What they did, they cut the rounds in half. So they wanted basically a cockfight. And I was like, wow, you know, they brought out some contract. Paid a bunch of money. They're going to, you know, pay for everything else. And then they started recruiting people from around the world to fight this U.S. team. There was 32 of us. Mm. I was 37 when that happened. And right now I'm getting ready to be 62. So it was, Ooh. it was a bit ago.
Wow. So then what ended up happening? Did you end up fighting?
I ended up fighting the champion from Spain. And I beat him down in a minute, 29 seconds. They stopped the fight. The punch count was 125 punches in 1 minute.
Wow.
Yeah, I wasn't playing.
Oh, man. So, short story for those listening. Jose here, he gave me my second job as I was a young Marine working at a clothing store in the mall.
That was fun.
And that was some fun times over there. And so we're here in Jacksonville, North Carolina, home of Camp Lejeune, Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune, where the Marines are stationed at. And now, fast forward, you are part of a combat club in Jacksonville, combat club boxing, and you're training all types of, you know, civilians, Marines, and all that, in getting them ready for, you know, amateur competition, you know, some even at a higher level of amateur competition. So describe what made you go into that. And do you feel like this is kind of like a full circle moment, given your experience coming into it?
Oh, man, it really is an amazing feeling. I've been at Combat Club now for 12 years. Prior to that, I had my own gym, and I had that for 7 years. And then I sold it because, as a matter of fact, when we were working together at the clothing store, I couldn't do the clothing store, be a district manager and do the gym. So Combat Club, I walked in there and they didn't have anything but jiu-jitsu. And I introduced a boxing program. I introduced a kickboxing program. I introduced a Muay Thai program. And as years came along, I kind of always gravitated to the boxing side. So I spent a lot of time with the guys in their stand-up, and how important that is to set everything else up. And it's just becoming full circle. Some of the guys, it's funny because a lot of the guys that are in the Hall of Fame now for the Marine Corps is guys that I had the pleasure and the opportunity to get them to a level to get on the Marine Corps team. And now with you know, my passion for the combat sport, you know, it's just so gratifying that, you know, that the Marine Corps has, you know, extended this huge honor and this induction basically for, you know, all the young men and women that I had through the gym, whether it was a combat club or at Hurricane Alley. And, you know, getting recognized for that. And still myself, I'm still competing, but I'm not competing in boxing. I'm doing jiu-jitsu now. But, you know, it's just so amazing that, you know, I'm not but a few more days, my name will be in history with some of the great Marine Corps fighters, some of the great servicemen that were fighters. And, you know, I don't even know how to describe that feeling. I didn't sleep when I got that phone call.
All right. And then, so you're still competing now. What are your future goals with that? Are you trying to get to a certain level with, what you're doing now, and just in general, like what are you trying to achieve with working out of the combat club and in your own personal career?
Well, I think I just want to send a message out there, and I think it's a message for my Marine brothers and sisters. So many of them, when they retire, they check out. And what I mean by they check out, they think that retirement and age, that number that you're supposed to sit at home and wilter away. And I'm here to tell you that some of my strongest competitors have been at the age of 40, 50, and now 60. What my goals are is, and I know you can't, nobody can see it, but these medals and belts and trophies behind me, all these medals behind me, these are just recent for this year. At 61, going to be 62, my goal is I'm going to be number one in my division in jiu-jitsu. Mm. There's a few things that may stop me. Of course, one, death. But if I can crawl to the mat, I promise you that I'll always give a good fight. Goals at Combat Club. I just want to continue to help some of the, you know, some of the young talent that's coming through there. And I want to help erase what I call the social media fighter. And what I mean the social media fighter is the guy that comes in, he doesn't want to train. He's already a badass. He wants to get in the ring and fight, you know, the heavyweight champion right off the bat and never throw a punch in his life because somebody told him that he was a badass. And he finds out real quick, within 30 seconds, that, man, it's not the way, that's not the way it goes. A lot of the work is done behind the scenes. What you don't see is where the work happens. And I want to be able to take those guys and just change their mindset and get this fight game, get the boxing back to its purity, because there's a lot of stuff out there that I may not agree with. You know, there's a lot of teams that like to put tomato cans in front of their fighters just to polish up their record. And the problem with that is when they actually meet a real fighter, they don't know what to do. So my job is I'm going to get you ready, whether they put Johnny Salami in front of you or they put somebody of the likes of, you know, of any of these great boxers that are out there today, you're going to be ready. That's it. You're going to be ready.
All right. And then last but not least, you know, I want to give you the floor for any shout outs and anybody that you want to recognize that, you know, that's been part of your journey. The floor is yours.
Ooh, man, part of my journey. Well, you know, first, you know, I gotta shout out moms, Mom Dukes. I'm going to tell you what, some of those, the 1-2 combinations you gave me growing up, man, helped me with my movements.
Help you move your head.
Yeah. You got to learn how to, because if the chancletas are flying, you got to learn how to move your head. So moms gets the first shout out on that one. Of course, you know, I mentioned JC Davis, you know, Dennis Lane, who was a teammate of mine for a long time. I got a couple of great coaches that coach with me out there in the gym, you know, Calvin Shepard, Coach Charles Jackson, who was on the Marine Corps squad. They're both, all three of those are Hall of Famer. You know, Coach Klein, you know, he's, of course, a Hall of Famer. Coach Sanders, Coach Michaels. I mean, these guys, just kept me alive and just going out there and doing my thing. Most important is Henson Ben, who was one of the ones that I guess started this ball rolling and put in the nomination for me to be inducted. And the reason behind it was really touching. Why they thought, or he felt that I should have been inducted in the Marine Corps Boxing Hall of Fame, to the point that it brought tears to my eyes, and it was, you know, it was very genuine, in the words that he spoke, and man, I would have never thought anybody would think of me, you know, at that level. And again, you know, just all the great, you know, fighters that, you know, that came through our threshold, and, you know, the opportunity that that they gave me to help them. And of course, you know, some of the people that whose butt I whipped along the years, you know, without them, I could have been here. You know, somebody got to win, somebody got to lose. You got to give those guys credit too. They had to take a fall in order for me to rise, you know? So, you know, so it's, you know, you just can't, you can never imagine this, you know, as a kid, you imagine, oh yeah, I'm going to be the Hall of Fame and doing something. And now just days away, it's actually going to happen. And it's going to be etched in the history books. And that's, that just seems so wild to me, you know. It's like, I still can't wrap my head around that, but you know, it's pretty cool, man. And it's even better that I got to talk to you, Mr. Abraham, because I'm going to tell you, you my hero when it comes to reporting boxing, because if I miss anything during that week, all I got to do is catch up on your podcast, and I got it.
Well, I appreciate you, man. And before we roll out, I got to send a shout out to our friend, Hector, who gave me my first job. Hector the Hector.
Look, is our man.
He gave me my first job at the Gap.
That guy there, he is one of my big supporters. Let me, I'll stop at this. Last year, I called him on a Thursday. I said, hey, I'm in Vegas. I'm getting ready to compete at the World Championship Masters Jiu-Jitsu Tournament. He said, what time? I said, I don't know, sometime in the afternoon. That crazy man, him and his wife, bought a plane ticket right then and there, got in the plane, flew in that next morning, showed up at the Coliseum, that at the Civic Center that they were having the event.
All right, so we left off at Hector. It seems like somebody that he broke his heart years ago must have been messing with the internet when we brought up his name.
Look, my man Hector, look, I'm telling you, my man showed up to my fight. Literally, I told them one day, the next day I hear in that Civic Center, the champ is here, as loud as could be. And it was Hector and his wife. I was like, no way. This guy is amazing. I went to Atlanta. I had a tournament out there just recently. He showed up. I mean, all I gotta do is give him 7 hours warning, and he shows up at wherever I'm fighting or wherever I'm competing.
Oh shit!
Amazing. All he talks about is me roundhouse kicking somebody in the head when I was head of security out of the club. And the straight right hand that knocked one guy out and I kicked him back to consciousness.
Oh man, shout out to Hector, man.
That's my boy.
Such a good time. Hey, listen, it was a pleasure talking to you, man. Definitely gonna see you on Saturday at the ceremony, man. And can't wait to share that moment with you.
Man, I'm thank you. And I'm so thankful that, you know, I got so many people, man, in my corner that made a lot of these things happen. And, man, it's going to be a good time. And, you know, being an honor is an understatement. I'm, you know, again, I'm speechless. And, you know, I'm still thinking I'm going to wake up from this and be like, oh, it was all a dream.
All right, bro. That should do it, man. I appreciate you coming on, and like I said, I'll see you on Saturday.
Yes, sir. Thank you again. Hosted by Abraham Gonzalez. It's the Boxing Rush Hour Show.